So please give a warm, warm welcome to our good friend with the Texas Plan, Dr. Rick Scarborough.
From Texas to stand up. That's going to be most of you, by the way. I need to see the Texas pastors. Please stand up. Now, gentlemen, what I have to say is to you. And what, let me begin by saying I need you to buy into what we're asking and going to be sharing. Our country is in a free fall right now. You can't be seated. Our country is in a free fall. We'd recognize that. I believe that God wants to use Texas to set a standard that would show other states how to turn things around. The information you've been given, the charges that you've heard, the information you'll get tomorrow. But this is a simple plan we're going to share with you on how we could save Texas. While I was pastoring First Baptist Church of Pearland back in the 90s, I bumped into a high school assembly, and I'll say more about that as I move through my time with you this afternoon. But I bumped into a high school assembly that was just ungodly. And while this speaker had caused controversy in school systems all around Texas, when she got to our school and I heard what she had to say, I said, enough is enough. So I stood up in a crowded assembly where I wasn't invited, where my daughter was present, didn't know her father was. And I challenged the woman's remarks. I took her remarks to the pulpit the following Sunday and I read them, four-letter words and all. There's some little old ladies in Pearland that still can't get over the fact that I said those words. Sometimes we're so heavenly minded, we're of no earthly good. It was my belief that if our kids could hear it, the parents ought to know that. So I just reported what had happened at the high school. And I'm telling you, dramatic changes took place. Now, I'm 72 years old. 4 years ago, I got a chance to go to Washington, D.C. with all expenses paid. My wife and I were flown back and forth. Our job was to teach Bible study to members of Congress, the State Department, the Pentagon, World Bank. It was a chance of a lifetime to take all those pastoral skills and invest them. But in 2018, as you know, an upstart, Beto O'Rourke, almost unseated our junior senator, Ted Cruz. Beto O'Rourke holds none of our values, I believe, as a communist. Now, that's my belief. You don't have to agree with that, but that's my belief. On the other hand, I've traveled around the country with Ted Cruz's father, who's a born again escapee from the tragedies of Castro's Cuba, and I know the lifestyle and life upbringing of Ted Cruz. Here's a man who held all of our values, who almost was unseated, won his race by 1.6 percentage points, and you know why? Because the church didn't engage. And so my former board called me and said, Scarborough, you got to get back to Texas. And so we ended that ministry in D.C. We came back to Texas. We reformed under a new brand, Recover America. Now, Recover America seemed like it was a catchy phrase. I had no idea how far we would fall in 4 years and how apropos Recover America would be. We have got to recover America. Amen? And we're going to start by learning how to recover Texas. And if you 85 pastors catch what I'm saying and catch on fire, we can do what we did in 2002. Where is Bill, one of my staff members? Bill Gaddis, stand up. Bill Gaddis had just retired from ExxonMobil, where he was a top executive. He's an engineer by training and trade. He's a graduate of the University of Texas. We're in his stomping grounds right now. He's married to Deborah, who is a wonderful vocalist. I got on to her because she didn't show up with her tapes so she could sing for us. But Bill stepped in, helped me as a preacher organize. We both were a lot younger then. But I'm telling you, we, in a matter of short order, turned Texas around, not we, but God. We had investors. What we had done in Pearland, which is a story I'll tell tomorrow, we were able to pull off in Texas because we had a $1.2 million grant underwritten by two primary sources. We traveled all over the state of Texas. We recruited about 2,000 pastors, And those pastors then registered the people to vote, got them out on election day. And if you go back and check historically, that was the year, 2002, when Texas went from blue to red. Both state houses, for the first time since Reconstruction, were pro-life and pro-family. And every statewide office holder was pro-life, pro-family in that year. We became the reddest of the red states. Now, over the following years, we've begun tracking further and further in the other direction. And so when I came back to Texas, later in life, later in ministry, I can't run as fast, I can't jump as high, but I can still run and I can still jump. And I intend to fight this fight until I die. There is no quit in me. I believe that the church of the living God does not lose until she quits. As long as there's one believer facing the evil, we are still capable of winning. Because you know what? God plus one is a majority. Truth of the matter is, God plus nobody is a majority. But it works through people. So I'm going to give you a plan. I want you to follow along. And I'm first of all, show you how bad it is. And then we're going to have a plan. And we're going to see God do in this election cycle what he did back in 2002. He's going to take a nucleus of pastors in this room, plus others we've recruited already in other events, and we're going to change this Texas. I want you to look in the faces of these children. They could be anybody's children. You know, my wife and I, where's Tommy? Love of my life, 51 years. See over there? See over where the money bag is? See her? It just happens to be. And by the way, if you haven't heard this, pastors, you won't buy books from me. I wrote books. God's blessed me with writing, but I have two of my published works over there. You have your choice of one or the other, plus three of the five booklets that are out as my gift to you. Just stop by and get your bag and take it. A lot of folks who are not pastors are trying to get those free books, but they got to buy them. Pastors, I know how much you're kicked around, and I know how underpaid you are. So stop by, and you talk to Nicole, my assistant, and she'll make sure that you get a bag with at least three or four items in it. If you want something else, and you can afford it, that's good too. Here's what I tell people. All the money that we raise at that table, we use to feed starving children. Ours. All right, let's walk through this. I got sidetracked. I was about to say, about 2 weeks ago, my wife and I became great grandparents. We've been married 51 years. Great grandparents. Now, that's why I'm here. I mean, some of these young guys, they're fighting for grandchildren. I'm fighting for great grandchildren. I mean, folks, listen, this could be your children, any of them. I'll tell you this, our children are under attack. Any disagreement? It's interesting to me that when I got in this battle, it was over school assembly. And here we are these many years later, and people are waking up to how our children are being destroyed in the public school system. And pastors, we are the last line of defense. There's nobody else going to save them. Corporate America is not going to do that. I'm telling you, the only hope for this country and the only hope for Texas is you. And what you do will determine what happens. This is research that we discovered. When I first came back, we were going to attack 2020 with a vengeance. And you know, we got shut down with 2020. And so I did Zoom calls until I zoomed myself right into another country, I think. But we began researching our local school systems, and we found some things out. This particular slide was taken off of HISD's website. When you go to these big school systems, don't just look at what first pops up. They're going to tell you the real story. I had researchers begin to dig into these websites and find out what they were really doing. And one of the big programs that's sweeping across the country is No Place for Hate. Now, let me ask you something. Don't you agree our schools should be no place for hate? So this sounds very good, doesn't it? No Place for Hate, created by the Anti-Defamation League, which historically defends the Jewry from being discriminated against, but they branched into a lot of other things, and they now have a curriculum, and they give awards to school systems. No Place for Hate. 15 school systems in Dallas ISD have been awarded their citation for No Place for Hate. Now, let me show you the curriculum. This is on the website of ADF. Have students work in pairs to match the words with the correct definition. Now, when you were in first and second grade, were you struggling with cisgender and transgender and intersex and LGBT? Is that what you were thinking about? Man, I was thinking about a better way to fix a slingshot that I could shoot with a rubber band and hit somebody back in the head. That's what I was thinking about. I was doing my best to stay out of the principal's office. I spent my whole fourth grade year in the principal's office with a desk pushed up against his desk. I'm not lying about that. My first day in the fifth grade, I walked into class and I had my desk pushed up against a teacher. She was known as the toughest fifth grade teacher. She became my favorite teacher. I became her pet. She put her foot down on the first day and said, "Scarborough, you're going to behave." Now, I was I was probably ADDD, XT, and all the rest of them. I mean, I probably needed to be drugged, but you know what? I wasn't worrying about how to define cross-dresser. This is what we're doing to our children. You know that we have recently, homosexuality has risen from in the single digits, 1-2%, for years and years and years. Now it's 20%. In fact, I was at a hearing, if you didn't see me today, I was with several that are in this room, at a hearing at our State Board of Education that's about to embrace a new curriculum that then will be offered to schools or to states across the nation. We are the largest textbook buyer in the nation, and so typically the textbooks that we have in Texas are the ones that others buy. And so Satan is after our school systems here in Texas. And there are people speaking out, some people in this room that are speaking out much more than I. But now that we've been doing this research, believe me, I've come to realize this. We're not losing our children in college as we supposed. We're losing them in the elementary schools. They've discovered that if they can get them young, they've got them for life. And so that's the curriculum. Here is SMART. See that circle at the top? Houston Independent School District. One of my staff members brought this to me. What is SMART? SMART is a brand, this was right off the website, brand new online sex education program that researchers from Northwestern University created for teen guys who like teen guys. Now, that's not too surprising. Read the next one. Share what matters to you and your community. We are interested in your thoughts about sexual identity and relationships, HIV. Eligible participants, high school students, boys, can earn up to $125 if you'll simply send the information in to the LGBTQ. Do you think for a moment your church could pay $125 for teen guys that want to learn about Jesus? But they've got the access to our kids, and they're paying them to look at what it's like to be a homosexual. School district tells four-year-olds to keep silent during Pride Week. This was on the cover of a magazine right here in Austin, Texas. Schools across America are introducing radical and moral initiatives hidden and often unknown to the parents. John Adams said this, "Our Constitution," read this out loud with me, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." In fact, he said it's like a net that's broken. The fish will swim right through it if there's no morality. Ladies and gentlemen, Satan has known always that the secret to destroying this great country that has saved the world twice and then rebuilt the nations we tore down. We didn't go and conquer as Great Britain would have done and others did. We bombed Japan and then built it into one of the great powers in the world. We bombed Germany till there was nothing left. And then went in with our people and our money and our machinery and our technology and gave them that. And I don't get here, I'm getting here a little ahead of myself. But that's what's happening. We are fighting a war. You've heard this. But the war for our children is called cultural Marxism. You're fixing to see a series of videos come out from our ministry that's going to educate you on what cultural Marxism. But make no mistake, the Marxists are trying to take over our country and ultimately our world, as we'll hear tomorrow. I want you to watch this. Watch it carefully. This video put out by the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus.
We'll convert your children. Happens bit by bit, quietly and subtly, and you will barely notice it. We'll convert your children. Someone's gotta teach them not to hate.
Gender fluidity and sexual preferences, making it in Blue's Clues for Children. This segment was featured on Nickelodeon for Pride Month.
We're all in this together.
This comes as drag shows for kids increase in popularity. Young kids are becoming drag queens. That's a boy. Documentary Drag Kids was released in 2019.
I teach my elementary school students about gender identity. I teach my students that there's a whole spectrum of gender identities. Some people are girls, some are boys, some are both, some are neither. Gender is all about how we feel on the inside and how we express ourselves. And that we need to use the name and the pronouns that people ask us to use when we refer to them. Here are some of the books and tools that I found the most useful when teaching about gender identity.
Bill, bring me my briefcase, please. This is books we've taken right out of libraries across the Houston Metroplex, that the school libraries, I'm saying. On the far left corner, RuPaul. He is the most famous, notorious transgender and cross-dresser in America. Beyond the gender binary, but the one I particularly want to point out that I meant to bring up here with me and just failed to do it, is the Gay BCs. Are you familiar with the Gay BCs? Let me see if I can pull that out for you. Our founders came out with a booklet for the early grades. I've got several copies of it. In fact, in my room I have a copy if you want to see it. But it teaches the ABCs, teaching deep theological concepts, taking verses of Scripture and teaching the children the ABCs. Now, you know something? Satan is not creative. He has no new ideas. He simply copies those that God has orchestrated and then turns it upside down and uses it to corrupt people and destroy people. The Gay BCs teach our children how to learn the ABCs. And I'm going to read you just a handful of the Gay BCs being recited in our public schools. G is for gay. It's a word that implies you're a girl who likes girls or a guy who likes guys. Let me go back and get you D. You can imagine what that one is. D is for drag. You can strut and dance in clothes that you love, dresses, heels, or pants. How about I? I is for intersex. Some are born with the parts of both a boy and a girl. Bodies are works of art. Do I need to read more? Every single letter. Here's T. T is for trans. It's a brave step to take to live as a gender you know is innate, or excuse me, T is for trans. It's a brave step to take to live as the gender you know is innate. So you just pick your gender and you can be whatever you want to be. You know, the Ten Commandments that they took down from our public schools, among other things, say, thou shalt not lie. Now, what are the intellectuals of our country, and these, as I heard so often over at the presentations for the State Board of Education, I'm an expert. I'm an intellectual. The pride was so thick in the room that you could cut it with a knife. They want you to know their credentials. And then after they impress you with their learning and their great credentials, they then proceeded to tell you lies. It is a lie to tell a boy that he's a girl. It is a lie to say that you can pick your gender. It is a lie to tell these kids when they're 4 or 5 years old, hey, which pronoun do you want to choose? Would you like to be this pronoun or that pronoun? Or, hey, we can make up another. That's a lie. Ladies and gentlemen, God created male and female. You are the watchman. You're the one that's got to tell your congregation and your people and your local school board what the truth is on these matters. The Bible says you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. But there's a price to be paid for telling the truth. I wanted to speak to that group today. I had some interesting things I was going to say. That was going to really upset the apple cart, but they didn't get to me, and I had a responsibility here. That's what we found in our public schools. By the way, this transgender thing is destroying women's athletics. This gentleman, Leah Thomas, was an ordinary swimmer on the University of Pennsylvania team. He wasn't even the lead swimmer among the males until one day he decided he was a girl. And so, complete with genitals, he joined the girls' swimming team, and he won the national championship by 36 seconds over second place. It is disgusting. He just dwarfed second, third, and fourth place and robbed those girls of an award that they should have gotten. Now, what happens on November the 8th? Can anybody tell me? That is the day we choose those who will make the decisions to govern over us. And these are important dates for you to remember. That day, Texas will decide whether we continue down the path of destruction or elect leaders committed to education rather than indoctrination in our public schools. It is time to stand up, speak up, and refuse to give up. I did an interview today with Epoch News, and I told the woman, that's our mantra. I'm going to stand up, speak up, and refuse to give another inch of ground to Satan as long as I live. Historically, pastors did stand up, and you've been taught at the feet of one of the great Christian historians about who we are as a clergy that you will ever sit under in Dan Fisher. If you don't have his book, make sure you get it before you leave, and then get the tape and show it to your church. Legally, we can. Matt Staver and others like him are fighting battles for us. I've always said I don't want to load the gun that shoots me, but I'm not ashamed to stand, for I am not ashamed of the gospel. For it is the power of God unto salvation, to the Jew first, but also to the Greek. Are you ashamed of the gospel, or are you courageously proclaiming the gospel? We're looking for men who will stand. Historically, pastors did. Legally, we can. But here's the last line. Biblically, we must. We are the last line of defense for our country. It is a sin for Christians not to vote. People sleep through it. They might get involved or might not. But the only choice for a believer is to vote. Now, say that with me. It is a sin for a Christian not to vote. You're a little hesitant to say that. You say, well, what verse is that? I'll give it to you. You probably never read it before. Therefore, to him, read it with me, who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is a sin. James 4:17. Pretty good source. That's the half-brother of Jesus. Here we are. The only thing worse than not voting is voting wrong. I'll say that again. The only thing worse than not voting is voting wrong. And that's why you need to stop by Dran Reese's booth over there. She's got the most incredible tools to help you get an understanding of who the candidates are, the good guys, the bad guys. She's got on her website a whole list of voter guides you can download and give to your people, accurate to the city, or I should say to the school board races on some of them. If you want a voter guide that'll blow your heart, the minds of your people, give them the Democrat platform and the Republican platform and ask them, now, which one glorifies God or at least points to him, whether those who espouse it do or not? Just look at what's in writing. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a Christocrat. You'll hear me say that to Amin Poor on a CNN documentary. She followed me around for weeks and videotaped everything we did and did her best to destroy our work. Just like Andrea Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, did with an HBO documentary. But I'm here to tell you here now, 10 years later, I'm still standing. And these people can't take down what God raises up. You need to get your people educated and teach them they can take those, to do their research and take the voter guide right into the voting place so that when they get down to those down-the-line races they have never thought about, they vote for the right person. And we'll help you do that if you join our team this morning. When Christians get involved, change happens. Carolyn High School, I'll say more about that tomorrow, but that's where I took my stand. And that's what launched me to a national ministry. And that's what created this opportunity for me to address you right now. Ladies and gentlemen, You do what you can, where you can, when you can, as long as you can, as well as you can, and that's all God asks of you. Do what you can, when you can, where you can, as long as you can, and that's all God expects of any of us. Well, I did that in Pearland, and God launched a national ministry. You'll hear more than about that, but I've written the book, Enough is Enough, which is a gift if you want to pick it up, that tells that story and also tells you how you can take your city for God. You know, we own the city council, we own the school board, our folks went on to greater and better things, as I'll show you. But this woman closed her broadcast with saying, Dr. Scarborough's successes were short-lived. Well, that was her prayer. That was her wish. She was doing all she could to make sure that happened. But I'll let you decide whether that was true or not. Glenda Dawson High School is an interesting story. Glenda Dawson was a sweet school teacher in our church. Had you said, Glenda, why don't you run for state legislature? She'd have laughed until her hose fell down. I mean, that was just not a concept she had. But she ran, and she got elected, and she stayed elected until she died in office, and they named a high school after her. Out of our church, Ed Thompson, who sold insurance, he was quiet and just not political at all. But he was elected to our city council. And then he was elected to the U.S., or I should say to the Texas State House. He's still there this day, some 20-some-odd years later. But he wasn't the only one. My secretary's husband left private law, ran for district judge, retiring this year after 25 years of standing for God in the public place. He wasn't the only one. The most recent one of the bunch is a young man that I had the joy of setting aside as a deacon when he turned 30. But just last year, he was elected the mayor of Pearland, which is the fastest growing suburb in Texas today, because we got the politics straightened out by putting Christians in office. And then there's Randy Weber. Randy was kind of a chameleon early on. He didn't know what to think about that Baptist preacher who was getting involved in politics, who was leading his people to vote and putting them in office. He felt like preachers shouldn't do that, and he made it very well known. But you know, one Sunday I looked up and he was sitting in the back of our church. I thought to myself, what in the world is Randy Weber doing back in my church? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. And so I called on somebody to pray at the end of the service, and I raced to the back door where he was seated on the back row. I grabbed his hand. I found out as we had lunch together that day that his daughter had gone to our youth camp and was excited and wanted to go to our church. They were lifelong Methodists, and man, this was a life change for them. But you know what I found out when I got to know Randy? I found out that I liked this guy. He was my kind of man. He soon joined our church. I had the joy of baptizing he and his son. And he's now sitting in the U.S. Congress, where in his office I taught Bible study for those 18 months I was going back and forth. He fixed breakfast every Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning when we had those gatherings. You don't know what you can do if you do what you can, where you can, when you can, as long as you can, as well as you can. That's all God expects of you. Don't sit there and say, I don't have a church like Paul Blair's. Paul didn't have a church like Paul Blair's till he started standing. Do what you can, when you can, where you can, as well as you can, as often as you can. And that's all God expects. He don't expect you to be me. He doesn't expect me to be you, but he expects me to do what I can, where I can, when I can, as long as I can, as well as I can. And that means with a bigger platform, there's more expectation for me now. And a longer prison sentence if we lose. Whatever it takes. I pulled 20 pastors in my home. This was in the fall of 2019. We thought we had to wait to 2020 to get involved, but one of my staff members pointed out that Houston had a school board election. So I pulled 20 guys into our home. My wife fed them dinner. We did it two successive nights, had about a total of 35 pastors. And I said, why don't we try to capture the school board at HISD? Let's get our people involved. A leading pastor, I called his name. Many of you know it. He said, that will never happen. So I didn't invite him to any more meetings. We found out that Cy-Fair, the third largest school system, also, Houston's the largest, also had three open seats. And so we got involved. We started hosting candidate forums and bringing attention to those good candidates that were running. You know what happened in that election in the fall of 2019? We put three members on the Cy-Fair School District that replaced 15-plus year incumbents who had embraced, and by the way, they had embraced this no place for hate. When we pointed it out, they hastily took it all down and took it back trying to save their seats, but it was too late. And we put two members, including a black Baptist preacher on the school board, HISD, the first two conservatives to sit on that school board in decades. And we're going to go back and get more at the next time there's an opening and a school board race in that school system. And we're now tracking seven different school boards across Texas where there's raging controversy. We're already speaking to pastors. We're going to try to win all seven of those school board races by simply asking the believers to vote their values. And if there's one going on in your locale, we'll assist you in helping your people see how one church can win a school board election, because nobody votes in school board elections except you, because you're going to do what you can, where you can, when you can, as often as you can, as well as you can, because that's all God asks. Read this with me. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you've already heard the story earlier. Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. Our plan to recover Texas is real simple. We want pastors who will stand up, who will speak up, who will refuse to give up. That's you. There's a manila envelope somewhere close to where you are. If it's right in front of you, then you're the captain. Open that envelope and you'll find several cards like the one I've got right here. If you're a pastor in Texas, get one of those cards. Every pastor in Texas, I want you to get one of those cards. And then I want you to open it up with me. And there's five things that you can do. This is something you can do where you can, when you can, as often as you can. I wouldn't say that in regard to voting. Christians don't vote but once, but the other side votes as often as they can. All right? I pledge. Now look at that. It's a pledge card. Oh, poor Baptists, they don't have pledge cards. Well, I'm a Baptist, and I'm fixing to sign a pledge card. I pledge I will, if you will, check pray. Check that. I pledge I will pray for revival and renewal to sweep across our state. Secondly, I will make sure every eligible adult in my church is registered to vote. Will you do that? Will you use your influence and take the methods that we will recommend? All right, number three. I will preach one sermon urging members of my church to vote wisely on election day. Now, if you'll go by that table and get your free books, in the booklets there's one entitled Mixing Church and State God's Way. And there's about 10 or 12 pages of important information that you'll benefit by. But then it gets down to the revival that took place in Philippi. And you'll see a sermon you can preach Sunday. It will tell you Paul and Silas were not politically driven. You agree with me? They went to Philippi to preach the gospel on an appointment of God who spoke to Paul in the middle of the night. They weren't politically driven. When they got there, we find out that they weren't politically correct. Everybody called a young lady who was demon-possessed a fortune teller. They looked at her and said, "You're demon-possessed." They looked at that gay guy and said, "You're a sodomite." They called it what it was. They weren't politically correct. They weren't worried about that. They said, "She has a demon spirit, and you know what the hope for her is? Jesus." And they cast that demon out. But then you discovered they weren't politically connected. I'm telling you now, the magistrates hauled them in the middle of the city and beat them almost to death with a cat of nine tails and threw them in the bottom of a hopeless jail. There you find they weren't politically dependent. They didn't call a lawyer. They didn't email back home. They had none of those means. They just fell on their face and began to pray and began to rejoice in that jail cell, that filthy, dirty inner hold of the jail. And that's when we find out that they weren't politically ignorant either. When God shook the city and set them free And the jailer said, basically, how can I be like you? I want to be saved. They looked at him and they shared with him the gospel. He took him home. The magistrates who just experienced an earthquake in the city said, hey, you know, man, we kind of mistreated those people. Maybe we ought to do what we do best. Sweep it under the carpet. Just send them off on their way. Get them out of town. Let's not have a scandal. And boy, Paul sat there in his dried caked blood and he said, I'm not moving. You run back to your magistrate and you tell him, I am a Roman citizen. And I've got rights. And there you have the dual citizenship. You see, Pastor, you weren't just called to preach. You were called to preach in America, the freest country the world's ever known. Your citizenship is in heaven, yes. But you're also a citizen of this earth, and of this country. And if you're not going to use it and benefit by it and advance the kingdom using the rights you've been given before they're taken away, then you deserve to lose those rights. So there's your sermon for Sunday morning. They weren't politically driven. We're not asking you to become little political operatives. We're asking you to stand for Christ. You're not politically correct always. Don't have to be. Do what's right. You're not politically connected. If you do this, by the way, and you're successful, those politicians start running, you will get connected. Because, man, they fear pastors who stand up. That's their worst, and that's why they're trying to shut us all down. Their worst nightmare is a church engaged. You don't have to be politically dependent. Call out for God to help you. And then understand that they were not politically ignorant either. So many pastors are politically ignorant. And so that's your sermon. Preach. Now, distribute voter guides, which Rand and others can assist you with. We'll assist you with that. And then lead your people to the polls. People don't do what we ask them to do. They do what we do. They follow our example. Now, I want you, if you fill that card out, and if you didn't, I'm going to beat you up. I want you to take that card. I want you to tear off half of it. What does it say? Yes, I pledge I will pray and make sure the people in my church are registered. Preach at least one sermon urging members to vote as followers of Christ. Distribute voter guides so that they're not ignoramuses when they vote. And lead them to the polls. Keep that as your reminder that today you made a commitment to join what we call Texas Team 2000. We're going to change this state by enlisting thousands of pastors. Now here's some important dates for you. Remember, and I'm through. By the way, it's not who counts or who votes that counts. Vladimir Lenin, or I should say Joseph Stalin, infamously said, but who counts the votes? When it comes to the votes, get your people to vote to be poll watchers. Get your people involved in the election process so that we don't have another election stolen. Get your people and put them in responsible places. And make sure that Christians are there to watch how the votes are counted and how they're cast and how they're handled. Key dates to remember. Last day to register your people is October the 11th. Make a note of that. That's not far away. Early voting begins October 24th and ends on November the 4th. And actual voting is November the 8th. And here's what we're asking of you. At your church, set aside registration Sundays as October 2nd and October 9th. Those are two Sundays in the time of voter registration when you ought to have people at the back of your church who are armed with voter registration cards. The easiest way is to go to your local post office and get those little cards and just make them available. But if I were you, I wouldn't just hand them out. Get them back and make sure they're mailed in, because many people put them in their Bible and forget about them. Your charge is to register every eligible voter within your influence to be registered on election day. And then secondly, get out the vote emphasis will be October the 30th. That is the only Sunday in early voting that the polls are open. They open at 12 noon. When I was in Pearland, we used to eat lunch together and go together to the polls. Get your people there in mass. so that they don't have to worry about something interrupting on the actual voting day. But if they miss the actual, the 30th, they can always vote on election day. Ladies and gentlemen, I will go back. Yes, you need that information? Write those dates down. That's a good place to stop. Now, all 85 of you, so that nobody's going to have to get in trouble, who are joining our team, you'll begin hearing from us on a regular basis. If you fill that card out and you mean it, you're going to help us. One of the things we're going to ask you to do is find 10 other preachers who are just like you and recruit them. And if you want, we'll do Zoom calls to assist you in that process. But I want you to take that card, put it back in that manila envelope, and then whoever serves as captain, please make sure it gets to Nicole at our table back in the far left-hand corner as I look at you, your right-hand corner. Put them in there, guys. I need 85 preachers who will help us change the direction of this state. Now, ladies and gentlemen, all God expects of you is that you do what you can, when you can, where you can, as often as you can, as well as you can. That's all he wants. Will you do that?